Hey everybody, welcome to We've Got the Beat. I'm Michael, that's Mindy on the other side.
Yep.
Have I always said Mindy? I feel like there's no discussion whatsoever. It's like, what do you go by as an adult?
What do you mean? That's my fucking name.
Well, I mean, you're not your full name. It's the Melinda. I mean, I'm just curious.
I mean, no, I don't really go by that. I mean, I do in the most professional sense of, like, if you have never met me before, then that's what I use. But once I, like, you know, become acquainted with a person, that goes away.
Okay. I was just curious because, like, I was thinking how sometimes when you're a kid, you refer to your friends or family members under a certain name that never really changes.
Yeah,
but the rest of the world, like, you know, Ron is Ronnie to his entire family, but we all met him after he went by Ron. But he's never gone by Ronald. Whereas I've been Michael for, 25 years now instead of Mike?
I don't know what point you said. Fuck this nonsense.
Yeah.
But
every once in a while, someone who knew me back in the 90s, or like early 90s, whatever, will call me Mike, and I'm like, whoa, that's weird. Like, at some point, I wondered if any of the brothers decided to go by Peter instead of Pete, just to separate the two.
Fair enough. I wonder, that's a lot of shenanigans.
That was a lot of shoe leather to get to that segue.
I know, I was like, you made it work, though.
Yeah.
You made it work. No, I say, if someone calls me by my full name, they don't know me. That's how I know a stranger.
Oh, okay.
Stranger danger. They call me by my full name.
On this episode, we're discussing the adventures of Pete and Pete. And what I love about Pete and Pete is that it's the first time I feel like I'm being presented with a film instead of just a TV series for kids.
I see.
Because it's not shot on regular sets. There really isn't any lockdown sets. It's not in front of an audience. It doesn't have that three-camera thing. It's shot on 16mm. I think even low-grade, like Buffy was shot on Super 16. Parker Lewis was shot on Super 16. But this has a real, like, low-grade, kind of grainy quality. Like, you're almost like watching a home movie.
Yeah, but, and yet, there's still something more to it because of, it's a whole world.
Yeah.
That they're presenting to you, not just a set. Yeah.
And I just love that it's, well, I mean, it started off, now, the problem with doing TV shows on this podcast is that it's very time-consuming. I mean, I think the least we've ever done was the 13 episodes of Gross Point. You know, we burned through those pretty fast. But a lot of times it takes bare minimum 8 episodes to really get the vibe of the show. Pete and Pete is interesting because someone put the playlist complete on YouTube where it includes all of the interstitials that used to be between the shows. Because do you remember, like, on Nickelodeon, they would have like 6 to 7 extra minutes at the end of the show sometimes, and they had to fill it in not just with commercials but with short films.
I'm not sure.
MTV used to do this sometimes too, but a lot of the lower budget cable shows had to fill time in some way, so someone presented them with these ideas for these short 30 second to a minute videos with the adventures of Pete and Pete, and they're so young. It's like 89 and 90, and they're just babies.
Yeah. Aww.
And so then it became like they did, I think, 4 to 6 half-hour specials. They weren't ready to commit to a series yet, so they did them like quarterly. But I think the general starting point for everybody is The Road Trip, which is the official first episode of the season.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I think that's the only episode we had on tape, and we watched it maybe 30 times.
We must have, gosh.
Or it's called King of the Road. Sorry, King of the Road, because his dad's obsessed with being, like, the master of, you know, the long road trips.
Yeah, sorry. I actually didn't watch that one this time because I was just trying to bounce around and get a good amount of episodes, and I dare say, I mean, I remember some of it because we obviously did watch it a lot
back
to particular episode, yes. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. There's something about the show that, like, I didn't really remember this, but in rewatching some of these episodes now, it had, for some reason, it gives me kind of a similar feeling to, like, Erie, Indiana.
Yeah.
I don't remember the, I mean, I always knew that it was kind of goofy and odd, and maybe that's, you know, part of the appeal for us. But I don't remember the sort of, like, almost mythical level of storytelling, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The fantasticness of it all. I kind of guess I forgot some of that stuff.
Well, it also helps that both shows were set in towns that didn't exist. So they could build some sort of mythology that it's just this weird little corner of the world where bizarre things happen. Now, of course, Erie, Indiana is like in true supernatural kind of world. But there's something about Pete and Pete that feels just a little bit off from reality.
Yeah.
Yes. The fact that there's a 5-year-old with a tattoo on his arm. And then there's Artie, my favorite character. Is it Artie? Why did my brain's not working, son? Yeah, Artie, the strongest man in the world, and just such a silly premise. And it seems like it's one of these towns where they're like, yeah, even if it's supernatural or not, we're like, yeah, this is completely normal for us.
I guess so. It seemed, that's the thing, is like, I remember loving it, and not, I don't think I thought there was anything like odd about it. Or it was, the oddness was just the right level from my oddness?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and we were kind of eccentric kids anyway, and we loved eccentric stuff. I mean, you think about some of the movies and TV shows we watched as kids, it always seemed like it was a little bit strange that we kind of locked in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so,
it's kind of just always a little weird, huh?
Yeah, I mean, because I just feel like, and there's something about cable TV that we really, like, honed in on. Because it was always airing stuff that was like this, like a little bit unique, its own voice, lower budget, something that seemed different than the generic stuff you would see on the networks. You know, like we glommed onto Kids in the Hall, which had its own unique voice and world. You know, this, you know, stuff that was on MTV, Comedy Central, VH1, you know, that kind of stuff that was a little bit off the beaten path. I mean, I even fell in love with, like, these worlds that of late-night TV, because there was no budget, there was no rules. I mean, Up All Night, that thing was probably shot in one day on a shoestring budget, but, you know, those guys presented weird movies in this oddball studio. That kind of stuff really... Well, Mystery Science Theater 3000, there, right there, is like its own little low-budget world.
Yeah, I was just gonna bring that up too. Like that, then it all kind of ties together with the things that were appealing to us.
Yeah, and what we also loved, I believe, is the fact that they did have continuous mythology. Like a lot of television, a big event would happen and it would be completely and utterly dropped and never referred to again, and I always hated that.
Yes, the continuity, which that was always a thing for me, and I'm just like, but wait, 2 episodes ago, or last season, or what?
Yeah, there is one thing that happens in Pete and Pete that threw me off, is that, I want to say it was the second or third episode of the official first season, is... Pete admits that he loves Ellen, and they kiss, and all of a sudden it's just completely dropped, and they go back to being platonic friends. It's so odd that they went that big, and then they just completely dropped it. I think they felt like maybe we made a mistake by making it romantic, and then tried to backtrack as fast as possible.
And maybe they also might have filmed or like aired things out of order.
That's true. That happened all the time back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't watch that episode. It's kind of weird, you know. There was enough episodes that we very easily could have each watched, you know, 8 or 10 episodes and not watched the same episode.
Right, so. Yeah, it was hard because there was a list we were given, but I was like, I don't know if I want to do that because you and I can find different things in each episode to discuss. Because there's a lot of ground to cover because it's 26 plus, I think it's 38 episodes, and there was just no way we were going to. We even gave ourselves a month, and we still just, you couldn't find the time.
It's just hard to, like you said, it's a lot more work to commit to a show. I don't know why. It just is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think a movie, at best, is probably the equivalent of maybe 10 episodes at most. You're talking long movies.
Yeah.
That's different. I believe maybe if we did attempt one other TV show, it would be Erie, Indiana, because I think it only lasted 13 episodes.
Yeah.
But then you don't have to watch every episode of Erie, Indiana, because there isn't a whole lot of continuity. Whereas it seems kind of essential, as this show goes on, they're building and building and building more of their world and adding more characters and stuff like that. Like, I forgot completely that Steve Buscemi was a big part of the show because he was Ellen's father. Yeah.
I was in shock. I definitely did not remember at all. And the thing is, like, you know, I mean, I knew that it had, like, a quirky vibe, but they seemed to really hone in on, like, who was, you know, who was eccentric and goofy and strange, like Iggy Pop and,
yeah,
like, Debbie Harry, the one, I don't know if you watched the episode with the teacher strike thing, or it was like the teachers were against Little Pete.
Oh, okay, yeah. I haven't seen it, but I remember it back in the day.
Like, but I did not remember all of these people. It was like so many people were in that episode as teachers. Like, not the normal teachers. They were only in, like, one episode because it was, like, a big show thing with the, you know, it was, like, Janine Garofalo, like, LL Cool J, like, Toby Huss is a teacher. Like, he's in more than one episode. It's like,
well,
I
Toby
don't know
Huss,
who
well,
fucking clue who Toby Huss was back then.
Well, you know Toby Huss is Artie, right?
No.
Yeah, that's how he started. He is in literally the very first short back in 1989, back when they had no money and you know, no clout or whatever, and he has been Artie the entire time, the strongest man.
I had no idea he was Artie, but he's also playing other roles.
Yeah, and I remember at the same time he was doing this, he was doing these little short vignettes on MTV, and I don't know if you remember, the big one was always Dennis Leary. He was always doing the short ones between the videos.
Yeah.
But there was also one where Toby Huss was playing a crooner, like a Frank Sinatra kind of guy, and he was describing the shows that were coming up. And that led to him getting cast in Vegas Vacation as the guy who's kind of crooning on the sidewalk and sells Ethan Embry the fake ID.
Oh my, no, I do think I kind of remember that bit, but I didn't know that was him. I mean, I didn't know who he was until, you know, a handful of years ago, and
yeah.
I just see that, to know that, yeah, he did, voices on, like, King of the Hill and all this stuff, too, for years and years and years.
Yeah.
It's just interesting when we've talked about this a million times. You're just like, once you figure out who a person is, then you realize, oh my God, they were in all this stuff, but I didn't know who the hell they were at that time.
Well, it's
so
funny.
It's just so strange.
There's a line of demarcation with his career where he was being very cartoonish in everything he did. He's fucking hilarious in this okay movie with Kelsey Grammer called Down Periscope. Very big and cartoonish, like Artie. But then he gets cast, of all places, in Carnival. That changed everything. So for
and
the last...
That,
yeah.
That was my introduction to Toby Huss.
Yeah, so
I
like the last 20 years...
And I would dare say a lot of people still haven't ever seen Carnival either.
Well, he's also in Halt and Catch Fire. He slowly gets added to the show, and by season 3, he's incredibly critical to the show.
Huh.
And it is a fucking phenomenal performance. It's very subdued. Yeah.
Very interesting. I just think it's so interesting with Hollywood and how it all works and how, like, you know, you could be scraping along, doing stuff, but not really getting noticed, but at least you're working, you know, but it takes one, you know, sometimes just one odd thing to make you suddenly recognizable. Like, you know, that one guy from Prison Break, you know?
Oh, yeah, the bad guy, Teabag, or whatever his name was.
Yeah, and then it's just like, And then he's in tons of stuff, but he's almost always a bad guy. It was like, he was like teaching acting classes in like LA because he, you know, for a long time because he wasn't getting enough work. It's just so weird how that life just must be so constantly stressful.
Yeah, because you never know if the shoe's going to drop.
Everyone in Hollywood must have an ulcer.
The show, like you said, is filled with tons of kind of like almost under the radar hip guys. Like if you're cool, you know who they are, but the mainstream audiences may not know. But it's not just the actors, it's also like whoever was either casting or behind production knew people in the music industry, and they're not really grabbing the big names. A lot of these guys have been established, but they've kind of faded a little bit. I mean, of course you have Michael Stipe, I believe, in not the first season, but like those specials before the first season. Kind of sending out the cool radar to other people. But I'm looking at this cast here of guest stars. We have Selma Blair when she was younger, Drew Carey, Ellen Claghorn, who has a reoccurring role where she is the ex-girlfriend of the bus driver. The bus driver cracks me up because he's so dead focused on his job, and then there's these little slight cracks whenever he's reminded of his ex-girlfriend that break him. I think it's in the final episode is where he is cursed by a stoplight that will not change. It will not change no matter what. There's no traffic around, but he refuses to break the rules. And every time he finally does get the green light, something happens. Like a little old lady going as slow as humanly possible across the street, and he can't go. He sits there for the entire episode. Just so angry.
I feel like do you feel like that bit's been copied a lot?
There's a lot of stuff.
I feel like I've definitely seen that a few times.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of people who either grew up on Pete and Pete or saw it and took stuff from it, thinking that mainstream audiences haven't seen it. So then I go, oh, you stole that joke. I see it a lot. Like, how many times I've been watching Mr. Show, and I'll see a sketch and go, oh, man, they completely ripped that off, like, 8 years later on SNL. Marshall Crenshaw, who's a really like cool underground rockabilly guy. Martin Donovan. Richard Edson is fantastic in this one episode where he's in love with the geometry teacher. And
I did watch that one too.
One with the was it the squid? I think they accidentally gets killed.
Yes, their mascot. Yeah, and the lady who played that teacher was like, I don't know if you watched the episode where she suddenly questions everything about what she's doing and should she be a math teacher? And then she goes on this journey. We find the perfect job for her. She calls out the numbers for bingo, except for that every number she pulls up, she has to tell a story about the number and talk about it. And then one by one, people just start walking away from playing bingo because they're like, nothing's happening here. And she just waxed poetic about numbers.
Why do you so... It's so interesting.
Going back to the math teacher again. It's just so funny.
Yeah. It's so interesting that Big Pete had such a crush on her because that's not typical. Everything in the show is unexpected, and I love the fact that they cast people who look like fucking people and not... up-and-coming stars, you know, and they don't act like actors, you know. I don't know where they cast these kids. The only one that has, like, that charisma is Little Pete. He has that thing where, like, oh, yeah, he could be a star. And he did. Well, he went on to all that for quite a few years.
He did a lot of stuff for a lot of years.
Yeah, he's never... Sorry, I was getting a drink. I'm thirsty, everybody. He was never the main character, but he almost steals every episode. It's amazing. The only episode I remember really focusing on him is where he has a bet with his mother that he can stay up for like a week straight or something like that. And so he and Artie and his friends, like one by one, they start falling asleep and they're going to fall prey to the nap. That's the only time Little Pete really gets a focus, I think.
Watched one of the very last episodes was the Christmas one. Did you watch that one?
I didn't. I missed. I've been like, told Halloweenies that Halloweenies and the Christmas. Super, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no! I was. He's super obsessed with like keeping the spirit of Christmas going even after Christmas. So he keeps, like, getting everybody to do all these things. Like, they go caroling every night, even though Christmas is over.
Yeah.
And then it's just, like, on and on and on. And then he has a showdown with the garbage man. And it's, like, it's a very little Pete. I mean, everybody gets involved with it, but it's very much, like, his purpose, his story, his thing. And that was a good one.
I've been told the Christmas episode and the Halloweenies episodes are two essential ones, and I kind of regret not watching them. I was going to hit play on Halloweenies just before you said, I'm ready to record. I was like, ah, crap.
Sorry.
Do you remember getting the promotional cassette from a cereal box? You used to have it.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was only two songs. I think it was Hey Sandy and then some interstitial music on the end. I can't remember, but that was really cherished by us.
I think we took our music. We took all of our entertainment very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big deal, especially for me to pass on stuff I thought was cool to other people. Not to be kind of like, I'm so cool, check this out. Like,
No, because we thought it was so great, we wanted other people to see it.
Yeah, a lot of times we're just trying to save a show, though a lot of times we'd watch it after it was already canceled. Whoops, that didn't do any good. Something about the show just really hones in on something individual. And these guys tried to develop Snow Day as like a continuance of the show. I don't know what happened. I don't know if Nickelodeon changed their mind or the boys moved on. They were both still acting at this time, so I'm kind of surprised it never happened.
I will say there's definitely like a similar feel.
Yeah. The...
Absolutely.
So Big Pete, I remember seeing him in Slackers, and I don't remember anything after that. I think they both walked away for a while.
I was pretty shocked when I saw him in Slackers, actually.
Oh, yeah, and he looked completely different. He grew his hair out very long. He had those huge sideburns. He was kind of a skeez in that movie.
It was probably fun for him.
And I remember...
It looks like he's working... behind the scenes now.
He's an electrician now, yeah.
Yeah, camera and electrical department on all this current stuff.
Yeah, I think cool. I think the nostalgia for the 90s has finally kicked in about 15 years late. So people are now like going into this era of Nickelodeon. I think it's called like the Orange Era. And there's these little videos in that playlist that's on YouTube where it's the two of them back together again as adults. Sometimes it's a sketch, like they have these little things they'll do together, or sometimes they just literally answering questions or they play contests together. They'll go out to the public at these festivals or whatever and go have fun with them. There's like 12 of them, and I swear the chemistry is so incredibly strong. I think stronger now than it was when they were on the show. You know, because they've grown as people and they have kids and, you know, they've had a podcast apparently for the last few years where they just get to discuss like the ventures of their life.
Oh, I might have to go find that because that sounds kind of cool. You know, the really sad part is I'm glad that all the episodes are available on YouTube, but my God, the quality is so poor.
Yeah.
It was really hard to, like, really fully enjoy.
Well,
is it actually legitimately on Paramount Plus or is it nowhere?
Part of it is. Only the part that they remastered for DVD. So seasons 1 and 2 are it. They actually put those out on disc and that's what you have on Paramount Plus. Season 3 was never released. It was never remastered. And all those specials and interstitials and stuff like that are just lost. Yeah. Well,
because I really think that I would actually enjoy... Like, legitimately sitting down and watching every episode,
yeah.
But not with the quality that it was. It was too hard.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of these shows is salvaging them is just, someone had a VHS tape, and that's it. And they loaded up to YouTube for archive purposes. But now, look, there is a lot of fucking terrible things with AI, ethically and artistically. But there's some benefit to it that if you run these old VHS tapes through an AI processor that it can clean up the picture, because a lot of the times nobody's going to put the money into actually going back and restoring like properly restoring. Yeah. So AI can do it on a lot lower budget.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does have its benefits if it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, I am drinking mushroom coffee. It's hard to explain. It's actual coffee, but it has like these little mushrooms
in
it.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It tastes like rotted feet, so it's exactly what you think it would taste like. I gotta doctor this up, but I feel like right now I'm licking my shoes.
Maybe throw that out, huh?
Yeah. Well, no. I paid for it, so I'm gonna finish it. But the other thing is, I remember when Michelle Trachtenberg was added to the show, and I never actually got to watch any of those episodes because I think she got added in the third season. I had forgotten that it started there for her, because then what is it after this? She goes to Harriet the Spy, right?
I think so, yeah.
Somewhere in there, I think there was a gap, and then she joined Buffy. What, maybe in 2000, 2001? I can't remember.
I feel like there was a pretty decent gap, yeah.
Yeah. Heather Matarazzo, is that her name, right? She pops in and out of the show, but
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like the kid who starred in Heavyweights, he's in a few episodes in the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting seeing these kids, you know, before they, you know, got bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, now I want to look and see what was between the Pete and Pete, Harriet the Spy was, yeah, basically the same time. She did a lot of TV episodes, something called Migo.
Oh, I think that's a TV show with Courtney Cox right before she did Friends with Bronson Pinchot, where he was an alien from another planet.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't see her, but like Ted Bigley Jr., Jonathan Lipnicki when he was in
Yes, okay, I thought he was in it. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so she dabbled in some TV. She did Richie Rich. Then Inspector Gadget. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. She plays Penny. I forgot about that, yeah.
And then, like, the next... She did, like, maybe, like, three or four movies in 99.
Yeah.
And then 2000 was Buffy.
The sad part is I feel like I don't see any of these kids really anymore. Well, I mean, for my own entertainment, I'm sure they're happy. I'm sure they have a healthy, happy life, whatever, doing something else.
Sure.
But I sometimes it's nice to revisit. So it's very fascinating to me when you see them and they're well adjusted. Thank God, not everybody got tortured in the business. Especially now that we're hearing all this horrible stuff about Nickelodeon. I think the difference between Pete is also the fact that it was not part of the Nickelodeon system. This thing.
Yeah.
So I've always wondered where it was shot. For some reason, I thought it was shot in Georgia, but I forgot that it was fall a lot and winter, so it could have been shot there. And I was like, is it a Canadian production? No, it was just shot in some weird location in New Jersey, which fascinates me because there really isn't a film studio in New Jersey. The only thing I can think of is maybe if Nickelodeon had their... if I remember correctly, at the time, MTV was handling their original productions and then just selling it to Nickelodeon. And they have offices in New York, and they probably just went looking for a little neighborhood in Jersey to film in. Jersey!
Yeah, that does make sense, because I wondered, honestly, like, I had thought to myself, this feels like it has MTV connections.
Yeah.
To have all those, you know, people that they had, and, you know, it feels a little quirky, like, you know, like how Donald Logue had those, like,
yes.
Videos like that.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the fact that there are three different worlds of Nickelodeon, because we talked about it during the sketch show stuff, is for all of the 80s, they basically acquired everything from other countries. And then in the early 90s, they started shooting stuff down in Orlando. And I think this is why Pete sticks out like a sore thumb, because it doesn't have any of that. It doesn't have any sort of studio polish. And having MTV as the guys doing it, yeah, that's why it looks different, why it feels different, why it feels a little bit hipper. That is not really, it's on a kid's channel, but like, it's so rare to have something that can connect to every audience. And Pete's one of those where adults could watch it and not feel stupid and connect to it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's very like, you know, yes, the kids are the stars, but it's pretty, you know, it's a more of a balanced, you know, effort with the amount of adults, you know, and the stories. And it's like how the adults and the kids mingle so normally and not in a, like, it was so innocent. Like, him and his best friend is a grown ass man, but it doesn't creep you out.
Oh yeah, that's the weirdest thing is whenever there's conversations between kids and adults, there's never talking down to the child or they're all on the same playing field. And that was unique too, because usually the show's like, now look, son, this is what we gotta do. Oh gee, dad, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I guess there's nothing really else to say about it, but there really isn't much like this in our world. I mean, just like maybe Freaks and Geeks. To try to think of a show that had a balance of both worlds and could cater to any age group. Because we are, during this era, we are just drunk on the family sitcom bullshit, like Growing Pains and Cosby Show and shit like that. Which is almost intolerable to watch as an adult. Whereas this isn't like that. I feel like I'm repeating myself, so it's probably time to wrap this up.
It's fine. It doesn't have to be that involved. I mean, I think, yeah, somebody find a better quality version and tell me where it is, because I'd really like to watch them again. And be able to see people's facial features. That'd be great.
There was a couple episodes that were really rough.
Some of them were real rough.
All right. So that is it for this episode. Thank you, Mindy, for a good one. And I didn't trip over anything like I did in the beginning, like usual. Did you just turn into Downtown Julie Brown? Wah, 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 wah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man. She really deserves a little more appreciation.
Which Julie Brown?
The redhead.
Okay, that's not the one I was talking about. She's the funny one. We're talking about the one that used to be like the cool hip city one, and she was always like, "It's Downtown Julie Brown." Wubba wubba wubba.
I just assumed that the redhead would have said something like "wubba wubba wubba."
You know what? On paper, that does sound like it would be her. All right, everybody.
Okay, let's be done.
Yeah, headed out. See you later.
Bye.